Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
True crime, unsolved cases, strange disappearances. Join me as we travel through the timeline of some of the darkest acts in human history. I'm your host, Kevin Eustace, and welcome to the third season of The Deadly Countdown. Episode 9, Catherine Knight, an Australian monster. We've all had arguments with our partners. We've all had, let's be polite and say, heated discussions. But what would it take for you to murder them? What would it take to push you so far you thought you could end their life? Most of us would not even think that far, or we couldn't even contemplate doing such an act. But what happens if that person is so twisted they look beyond the murder? And they think, how barbaric and how horrific can they make this entire event? And we're not talking just, I don't know, Ed Gein sort of displaying the items or making jewellery or furniture. Arguably, very arguably, we're talking about something that might be worse. How about cutting up the body parts and serving it as food to your partner's children? I mean, there's evil, there's mad, and there's a combination of both. And I think this could sit outside both of them. Welcome back to The Deadly Countdown. It's episode 9 of season 3, which means it's our penultimate episode for this season. And we have quite a few changes for season 4. Namely, there won't be a season 4. What we're going to do is we're going to change the name of the show, and therefore, this arguably will be the last season of The Deadly Countdown. But don't worry, you don't need to change anything if you've subscribed to this show. I'll change all of the details in the background, and you don't need to do a thing. You'll just see the name of the show change, TBC, as you'll see the logo change, and you should notice a slight format change also. So, following our season finale next week, there will obviously be a 2-week break, and then we'll return, and when we do return, we will return completely changed. But for the better, I do believe. I think I've now dipped my toe in this area for long enough to make a more confident show, and that's what's going to take place. Think of it more of a transformation than an end. So, The Deadly Countdown has technically been my cocoon, and what's to come is the butterfly. And that's arguably the worst analogy I've ever done. Anyway, of course, we also have a Patreon attached to this show. The name on that Patreon will also change, but what won't change is Cold Case, which is a Patreon-only show coming to you twice a month where we look at some of the most interesting and infamous unsolved cases throughout history. And joining that Patreon now is arguably the best time, because we're about to take that break in seasons. Or should I say, we're about to completely rebrand the show. Therefore, if you join the Patreon, there's a full back catalogue of Cold Case episodes for you to listen to. We're building a wonderful community of like-minded true crime enthusiasts over there on Patreon. So why not come and join us? Head over to patreon.com/thedeadlycountdown. And when the name does change and the rebrand takes place, everything for Patreons remains the same. You still receive these episodes ad-free and before everyone else, and of course can gain access to Cold Case. So, if you like the sound of early ad-free releases and access to a Patreon-only show, I would suggest joining now before the rebrand takes place, and you can say you were there when it was the Deadly Countdown. So, head over to patreon.com/thedeadlycountdown. But right now, for Catherine Knight, an Australian monster, let's start the clock. We are about to delve into arguably Australia's most chilling and notorious case. The shocking and harrowing case of Catherine Knight, an Australian woman whose gruesome crime shocked the entire nation and led to an unprecedented sentence. Catherine Knight was born on October the 24th, 1955, and she holds the rather notorious distinction of being the first woman in Australia to be sentenced to life imprisonment without any possibility of parole. You see, in February 2000, Catherine Knight brutally murdered her partner, John Charles Thomas Price, in a crime that could only be described as horrific. The brutality of the murder and the subsequent details of the investigation and trial have made this case a grim but essential part of true crime history. Currently, Catherine Knight is imprisoned at Silverwater Women's Correctional Centre in New South Wales, serving her life sentence for this unimaginable act. In this episode, we will take you through the chronological events leading up to the crime, the investigation that followed, and the trial that captivated the public's attention. By the end of this journey, you will have a comprehensive understanding of the dark tale of Catherine Knight and the heinous crime that led to her life behind bars. Now, as we go into this story, I do want you to brace yourselves, because the details of this case are not for the faint-hearted, and I'm being sincere with that. You see, Catherine's actions go beyond the realm of what we would typically think as human behaviour. That's why I named the story An Australian Monster, because it's the act of a monster. It's a story that forces us to confront the very darkest aspects of our nature. So put your headphones in, sit back, and let's go through this together. Born in Tenterfield, New South Wales, Australia, Catherine's early life was marked by instability and violence, as is often the case. Knight's mother, Barbara Roham, had left her previous husband and four children to live with Ken Knight, Catherine's father. This new relationship was turbulent, and Ken was an abusive alcoholic. He frequently raped Barbara, sometimes up to 10 times a day, and Catherine would often bear witness to these brutal assaults. Growing up in such a violent environment obviously left a deep mark on Catherine, and she struggled academically, often being described as a loner or a bully. And despite these challenges, she exhibited a strange dichotomy of behaviour. She was also known for being kind and protective towards her loved ones, but she could also be incredibly violent and unpredictable. Catherine left school at age 15, barely literate, and she took up a job at a slaughterhouse. And she quickly rose to prominence due to her proficiency with knives. She was even given a set of her own butcher's knives, and she proudly displayed them above her bed, almost a foreboding sign of things to come. Now, as can be the case quite often in these scenarios, when a child witnesses their parents being absolutely horrid to each other, they end up in horrid relationships themselves. And Knight's personal relationships were equally volatile. She married her first husband, David Kellett, in 1974. And their relationship was fraught with violence. Catherine tried to strangle Kellett on their wedding night. Despite this violent relationship, they managed to have a daughter together. But Knight's violent tendencies continued in each relationship that followed, including with David Saunders, with whom she had another daughter. And her relationships were always marred by jealousy, possessiveness, and physical violence. In 1995, Catherine met John Charles Thomas Price. He was a local miner, and Price was well-liked in the community, described as a great bloke by those around him, and a devoted father to his three children from a previous marriage. Now, initially, their relationship seemed promising, but as you can guess, it quickly devolved into a familiar pattern of violence and abuse. Knight's jealousy and possessiveness led to frequent arguments and therefore frequent physical altercations. I mean, when we look at Catherine's early life, it is evidently clear that her environment played a part in shaping who she was, her violent tendencies. It's like watching a slow-motion train wreck, one traumatic event after another, each one pushing her further down a dark path. But what's really chilling is how she would balance this violent persona with moments of kindness and affection. It's like being with two different people. Her relationship with Price is particularly heartbreaking, because here was a man who was loved by his community, a good father trying to build a life after a failed marriage, and then he runs into good old Catherine Knight. On the surface, it might have seemed like a second chance at happiness. But beneath that veneer, the same destructive patterns were lurking, and they were ready to unleash unimaginable horror. Now, as we move forward, bear in mind that these early years and relationships, they're crucial to understand the full scope of Catherine's actions and the subsequent tragedy that would unfold. Catherine and John began their relationship in 1995, and by this time, as we've said, Catherine had a well-documented history of violent behaviour in all of her previous relationships. But despite these red flags, Price was happy. Or at least he seemed happy. Maybe, like most domestic abuse victims, he put down the initial slaps to the face, etc., as moments of out of character for Catherine. But when they escalate, you still try to rationalise their behaviour. And before you know it, you're rationalising things like broken noses or scratches that draw blood right down your face. Price was a father of three, and he was known for his affable nature, steady in his job as a miner. His friends and family were initially supportive of the relationship, and they genuinely hoped it would bring stability to his life. But it didn't take long for the darker aspects of Catherine's personality to come to the surface. Catherine Knight's bubbling under the surface psychopathy was rearing its head now and then, and there were several occasions where Price himself had to call the police because of Knight's violent outbursts. On one occasion, she stabbed him in the chest. He survived. And despite the severity of the incidents, Guess who did not press charges or even leave her? Price. Because that's what people in that situation do. They feel stuck. Sometimes they feel they deserve it. It's such a horrific situation for this poor man. Maybe he thought she'd change. That's often the case, that you believe this violent, horrible, sadistic individual will change with you. You know how to change them. No, you don't. It's inherent in them to do what they do, and they will do it on whoever they're in a relationship with. In February 2000, the relationship reached breaking point. Knight had become increasingly unstable, and Price had finally had enough. He got an apprehended violence order, or an AO, against her, which is kind of a restraining order in the States or the UK. And this legal action signalled not only the end of the relationship, but it also seemed to escalate Knight's instability and anger.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Friends and colleagues noticed Price's growing fear of Knight. He'd confide in them about the worries he had, and they all urged him to leave her immediately. Unfortunately, despite these warnings and his own attempts legally to protect himself, the situation continued to deteriorate. Because, you know, these relationships can be complicated. But when you add someone as volatile as Catherine into the mix, it is literally a time bomb. John Price was a decent man, looking for companionship, stability, and love. But what he got instead wasn't just a nightmare. It was the end of his life. Imagine being so afraid of your partner, you need to get a restraining order. But at the same time, you're too scared to leave them completely. It's a horrifying catch-22. Price's friends saw the writing on the wall, and they tried to help him. But sometimes, fear and hope will cloud the clearest of minds. So as we move on to the night of the murder, remember the escalation that we've seen here. It's a tragic build-up to an inevitable explosion, and one that cost John Price his life. The night of February the 29th, 2000, will forever be remembered as the climax of Knight's violence. John had already taken out this restraining order against her, but on that fateful night, Catherine managed to enter his home. Price had returned home from work and followed his usual routine. Little did he know that this would be the last night he would have alive. According to the investigation, Knight had prepared for the evening meticulously. she'd sent her children away for a sleepover at a friend's house, making sure there was no one home for the horrific events to come. Night arrived at Price's home. The two argued, a common occurrence between those two, despite this restraining order. And Price still allowed her to stay, possibly out of resignation, possibly an attempt to avoid further conflict, or possibly, as we've stated, the mindset of the verbally, physically, and mentally abused. After John went to bed, Knight initiated her plan. She took a shower, and then she dressed in a nightgown, like every normal night. And in the early hours of March the 1st, Knight attacked Price as he slept. She used a large butcher knife and stabbed him at least 37 times. The wounds were all concentrated on his chest and back, indicating a frenzied, brutal attack. Even worse was, as John was attacked as he slept, he obviously woke up, and there was evidence he tried to escape the attack. But Knight continued her assault, ultimately killing him in the hallway of his home. Horrible, isn't it? But it didn't stop there, because Knight had further plans. After Price's death, these plans were even more grotesque. And I'll warn you now, if you have any children listening, I would cover their ears or skip a few moments, because what she done next is unbelievable. She skinned his body with the precision of a butcher. She hung his skin on a meat hook in the living room. And then she decapitated him, placed his head in a pot of boiling water, and intended to cook part of his body. Catherine then arranged the parts of Price's body on plates with vegetables. Her intention? To serve them to his children. The following morning, a co-worker noticed Price's absence at work and became concerned, especially when he failed to answer his phone. So his employer sent a colleague to the house, and the sight that greeted them was beyond comprehension. Police were called immediately, and they discovered the gruesome evidence of Knight's actions. I mean, this is where the story stops becoming horrifying and turns surreal. It's almost impossible to fathom that level of brutality, that level of cold calculation that Catherine Knight displayed. We're not just really talking about premeditated murder. We're talking about a monster. I know I keep referring to the title of the episode, but this is a monstrous act. It goes beyond madness. It's premeditated. You can't be seen as mad if you've gone through that level of planning. Imagine the sheer terror that John must have had, waking up already in pain due to several stab wounds, to find Catherine above him and going down with the knife over and over again. And then the aftermath, meticulously butchering and preparing his body like a macabre feast for a king. It's not just out of a horror movie, it's too real. It's horrible. The morning after, the scene that the police walked into was like something from a nightmare. It was one of those scenes that even seasoned officers said they'd never forget. Anyway, let's jump to the investigation, because that began immediately after his body was discovered. The initial response, obviously, by police was shock, due to the grisly nature of the scene. And they'd never seen that much brutality. As they entered the home, the police found John's lifeless body everywhere. His skin had been expertly removed and hung on this hook, and the scene was even more macabre by the head in the pot and the other part of the body prepared to eat with vegetables. It was clear the perpetrator had a background in butchery, And let's all have a guess who they first went to. It'll probably be the ex-butcher, the one with the restraining order. Yeah, let's go for her. But Knight didn't need to be hunted, because she was found at the scene. She was lying comatosed after a failed suicide attempt. She took a large number of pills in an apparent effort to end her own life, after doing what she'd done. But the police took her into custody and she was took to hospital for treatment. Forensic teams worked tirelessly to document the entire crime scene and collect all the evidence they could. And the evidence was overwhelming, and obviously only pointed to Knight as the perpetrator. The blood splatter analysis indicated a prolonged and violent struggle. The blood trails led from the bedroom to various parts of the house, which only confirmed that Price had tried to escape, God bless him. Investigators also discovered a chilling letter written by Knight. This letter not only further incriminated her, she basically detailed all of her grievances against Price and wrote about her premeditation. Additionally, of course, her background as a slaughterhouse worker and her well-known proficiency with the use of knives only added, if it was needed, more weight for the case against her. Interviews followed with friends and family and co-workers of both Knight and Price, and it only revealed a history of domestic violence, threats, punching, hitting. It painted a picture of a relationship that had been a dangerous downward spiral. Price had confided in friends about his fear of Knight, and the AO he'd had taken out against her provided the final piece of evidence needed, if any additional evidence was needed, that he was trying to protect himself from her escalating violence. Can you imagine being one of those police officers walking into that scene? And then, of course, you've got Catherine lying there comatose, trying to kill herself, basically, because she's maybe thought through her actions and realised she's a monster. There's that word again, but my God, is it true in this case? The forensic evidence left no room for doubt. Every piece of it painted a clear picture of a premeditated brutal attack by someone who knew exactly what they were doing. Those who knew both Knight and Price provided critical insight into their volatile relationship, and everything should have really been tied in a neat bun. The trial of Catherine Knight began on October the 15th, 2001. And as you can imagine, it garnered media attention like no other. And that's only down to the gruesome nature of the crime itself and the shocking details of the aftermath, what Catherine then done to poor John's body. The prosecution, led by Mark McAdam, presented a case that left no room for doubt about Knight's guilt. It was overwhelming. They detailed how Knight had methodically planned and executed the murder of John. They presented the crime scene photos, which were so graphic, the jury needed a warning before seeing them, because the images showed the extent of Price's injuries and the horrific state his body was left in. This visual evidence was a crucial role in establishing just how brutal the attack was to the jury. Obviously, then forensic experts would testify about the blood splatter analysis, saying it was a prolonged and violent struggle. They also explained how the wounds on Price's body were consistent with an attack by someone with extensive knowledge of butchery. A key piece of evidence was the letter written by Knight, which obviously detailed her grievances against Price and suggested premeditation. The letter indicated that Knight had been planning the murder for some time, adding a layer of calculated intent. The defence, led by God knows who, well, we do have a name, but who would choose to defend this person? Well, I'll tell you. Stephen Hanley. He attempted to argue that Knight was suffering from severe mental illness at the time of the murder, and she was not fully aware of her actions. They brought in psychiatric experts who testified that Knight had borderline personality disorder and claimed her mental state had deteriorated to the point where she couldn't control it. Sorry, that doesn't add up. Because we know she's got a history, years worth of history, of domestic abuse. That's what adds up. The only difference is between poor John and her previous partners was they got out before she got them. Knight showed no remorse, as the brutality of the crime and the clear evidence of premeditation overshadowed the defence's claims. And on November the 8th, 2001, Catherine was found guilty of the murder of John Price. The judge, Justice Barry O'Keefe, sentenced her to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole, stating that Knight's crime was so heinous, so premeditated, and she was fully aware of her actions, that she should never be released. Again, Knight showed no remorse, and she maintained a stoic demeanour. But the sentence made history, because it made her the first woman in Australia to be sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. It marked a significant landmark in the country's legal history. The aftermath of Catherine Knight's conviction was a mix of public shock, media frenzy, and a sense of justice being served. The brutality of her crime and the detailed reveal during the trial left an indelible mark on the Australian public. Catherine Knight was sent to Silverwater Women's Correctional Centre in New South Wales, where she remained since her conviction. Her life in prison has been relatively uneventful, but that's largely due to high security measures in place to ensure she can't harm herself or anyone else. That said, Knight has been described as a model prisoner, adhering to prison regulations and keeping a low profile. You know, when a case like this hits the news, it's not just about the crime, it's about the ripples that go through the community, the legal system, the nation's conscience. As it should. And it should for every human being on the planet, because you see, the most terrifying thing for me about the Catherine Knight case, yes, it's horrific, yes, it's gruesome, yes, it's grotesque, yes, she is, and I'll use the word again, a monster. But the most terrifying thing about the case of Catherine Knight is the number of Catherine Knights, both male and female, or whichever gender they choose, that are out there right now, doing everything except the murder part to their partners. This is happening right now. This could be happening in your street. Somebody being domestically abused so bad they've lost any sense of self. Obviously, all domestic abuse is abhorrent, but I know because I've seen it happen. When a woman attacks a man in the street, physically, no one helps. When a man attacks a woman, rightly, people jump in. It's one of those strange arguments where equality stops. And whatever our views, rightly or wrongly, are about which roles genders should play, there is something exceptionally emasculating for a man to be attacked by a woman. I've literally seen it twice. Two occasions, I've seen a man physically attacked by a woman. It was across the road, and it was amongst a group, and it took place, and the person's people he was with, his friends, laughed. And I genuinely thought the guy had a bloody nose. That's how physical it got. And fair play to him, he didn't try and hit her back. He just took it and stood there whilst she walked down the road away screaming like she had been physically attacked. It was such an interesting thing to see, as in how humans treat each other based on their gender. I guess what I'm trying to say, which is obvious when you think about it, is equality should be abuse is abuse. If a man attacks a man, abuse. A woman attacks a woman, abuse. A woman attacks a man, abuse. And they should all be treated and handled exactly the same. Catherine Knight's case shone a light on men being physically abused by their partners. And it is something which is almost taboo. It's bizarre. It really is bizarre. Because although I can't state this as fact, I would put a pretty hefty bet on when John confided in his male friends about what was going on, what do you think they said back to him? Do you think they showed the same concern a woman would if they confided they were being beaten by a man? I don't think so. He probably received laughter, mockery, and even worse, 100% someone would have advised, well, why don't you hit her back? And as I've said, the most terrifying thing about this case is not necessarily the case itself. It's the fact that 80% of what built up to that murder, that gruesome act, could be happening next door to you right now. And you'd never know. Because victims never shout, they never scream, because they don't think they're worth it. If anything, this case really worries me because it lets me know there are more psychopaths out there than I ever would have imagined. But right now, for episode 9 of The Deadly Countdown, our penultimate episode, and for Catherine Knight, an Australian monster, let's stop the clock.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.